Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, not this post covering finance and property news. Monday evening, and Edwin's back slightly later than normal because he had a busy day. Edwin, welcome back.
Very busy day, Martin. I was just inspecting some apartments, and yeah, we're going to show a video of what I got a glimpse of today. And it's absolutely, it's the beginning of the end, as some would say, with regards to major defects moving forward. But you know what, Martin? That's nothing in comparison to the shenanigans and what's going on with in the political world. So put the popcorn away and break out the tequila, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, you know, we should probably start with the biggest con job in town, right? This is the housing dog whistles and sugar hits as Election Day looms, as I made a show yesterday on. And, I'm not surprised, but I'm disappointed. I thought that even politicians had some degree of credibility, but no. So we've got this situation where now we've got, Labour and the coalition both effectively putting policies on the table that are going to make the housing crisis work. You've got the tax deductions for first home buyers from Dutton, and you've got stuff from Albo too. Of course, the interestingly, Metricon came out and said it's time to fix the system, not just make promises, which is probably right. But, you know, O'Neill's talking about government-built homes will be cheaper than private sector homes if they can build them. But there's Tarek says, well, hang on a moment, you've got $10 billion that you're going to pony up over 100,000 homes. That's 100K per home. How's that going to work? Which is a good question. Is it going to be a discount on the market price? As Reserve Bank of Property said, best way to save for a 5% deposit if you don't have rich parents is to spend 5 years living in the tent, which I thought was about right. And then we got this from Crocodile, which Matt Barry reposted. The Albanese government effectively announced a state-sponsored subprime mortgage scheme by promising to allow all first home buyers to purchase a home with only a 5% deposit, with the government guaranteeing up 50% of the loan value. So, you know, how does that work? And then, of course, Chris Richardson came out and said it's a dumb policy from both parties. It's a dumpster file of dumb stuff. It's the well-worn path of failure in Australian policy making, and both the government and the opposition seem intent on proving that they can double down on that dumbness yet again. Scott Phillips said, we're being bribed, not even with our own money, but with the debt of the policy we leave to our kids. There's no national interest, only self-interest. And as James says, if the buyer defaults and can't get their mortgage, the taxpayer has to pick up the tab. And Tarek says, imagine making water, electricity or food deliberately more expensive. Just look how people flip out about electricity bills, etc. But then just to add a little bit more to the spice, we then got this. Dutton has now come and said, we want to see prices steadily increasing to protect home ownership. What does steadily increasing ever mean, says Tarek. And of course, David from the Tax Party said Peter Dutton and Claire O'Neill are the only two who have admitted they're going to do with our tax laws and tax system. They want to increase house prices, to increase mortgage debt. That's their job, increase mortgage debt. And as Tarek said, once it's happenstance, twice it's coincidence, three times it's enemy action, quoting Ian Fleming. This sums up Aussie's housing market as a political issue nicely. It's broken, economic damaging, and unaffordable because those who want it to be that way. And David Taylor from ABC says, the coalition has targeted repayments, Labour has targeted the deposit, both by definition and to demand. Two-thirds of households want property prices to rise. So you can argue the economics of the policies, indeed they've been slammed, but the politics is on the solid ground. And that's the point, Edwin, pure politics.
Well, but none of it really deals with the problem and the issue. And on the one hand, we've got to realise that at the end of the day, we're the ones that are going to be paying for it through our taxes, and through our previous taxes, our current tax, and the future taxes that we're going to be incurred. So none of them want. It's all. It seems to be all a mystery. But look, to how to fix the problem to the politicians, and what you know, whose vote are they trying to, are they really trying to get? Look, at the end of the day, you and I know that this is going to keep on going, and it's going to keep on going, unfortunately, at the behest of those that are really pulling the strings, outside of our major political parties. It is going to keep on going. We are going to be the welcoming mat for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people, and it's going to be on the guise of wanting to wanting to bring skilled labor, whether it's the Libs or the Labs. We're going to have to bring in people with money that want to set up small businesses, because the small businesses are suffering. Look, and at the end of the day, with everything that you look around you, folks, the simple equation to all this, is the fact that none of the majors really want to fix the problem. They want to keep on stoking the problem, and things aren't going to change over the next 3, 4, 5 years. Even if they started to build, as I've been saying for a long time, even if they started putting shovel to the ground today or tomorrow, these homes, so-called homes, more like dog boxes, aren't going to materialize for another 3, 4, 5 years if they move forward with their announceables. But they won't. The majority of the money that's collected, that's put aside, that's been earmarked to fix the issue according to the way that they want to fix it, is going to be it's going to go to think tanks. It's going to go to groups that are going to be that are going to be commissioned, or whatever you want to call it, in order to look at ways and means to move forward with the so-called policies, genius policies that they think that they're putting out, and it's going to solve the issue, and that's where all the funds are going to go, as you said in your show previous in your previous show over the weekend, the majors, they're calling each other out on the lies, and more lies that they will continue to spin. In the meantime, we've got a housing shortage. In the meantime, we've got a population growth exponentially because of the immigration policies that the Libs and the Labs are in favor of. They're not really wanting to solve the issue. So, in the meantime, for the Aussie battlers, it's suck it up and see. And let's see who's going to fool you the most to win your vote.
Well, this is interesting. And of course, the original reaction from the media was, well, this is a policy aimed at younger voters and, those wanting to get into the property market. But I believe it is fundamentally about the two-thirds of people who actually have property and don't want to see property prices come down. So that's the real dog whistle, I think, in all of this. And by the way, just to add insult to injury, it's interesting that the Housing Future Fund, the HAF, according to an article, was likely going to require a bailout because, of course, it hasn't grown as much now with the stock market movements. And of course, it's quite interesting if you look through this. As Cameron Kushner says, only in Australia would a government set up a housing fund that doesn't build any new homes for several years and then might end up needing a bailout. And as Cameron said, referring to his previous attempts to try and get people to realize this is a risky, expensive, and unnecessary waste of money worthy of being a story arc in Utopia, which is that ABC program. And that's about it. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. So even when they do try to intervene, they stuff it up left, right, and center, because the chances are that they're going to have to actually put more money into the future fund. And just to reiterate what you said, I want to just come back to this migration story. This is the latest migration data from the ABS, etc. And you can see there the uptick. And there's 200,000 new arrivals in 30 days. in the middle of a housing and rental crisis, as Tom says. If I was young, I'd leave Australia. Your government seriously hates you. And that's really the point. There's nothing here from two major parties that in any way seriously are dealing with the critical issues that we face. And it's interesting, if you look at the polls, one of the ones just come out, it shows that the coalition's on 35, the Labour's on 33. You've got all the smaller, they've knocked out the uncommitted. And that gives you a two-party preferred ALP 52, coalition 48. And it's interesting that, of course, one of the things that the coalition did this last week was to talk about its gas reservation policy, and has sort of sidled up to a smaller immigration program, although I don't believe it personally. But if you want to know more about the gas reservation policy, which I made a show on, gas, one policy to rule them all, this is actually a very important step forward in terms of energy, which is one of the other issues that neither side of politics really wants to take seriously, right? The costs of building a home is actually higher than it should be because of all these shenanigans with regards to, you know, the state fees and high costs of materials, but also energy and high energy costs. So even high energy costs not only impacts households and businesses, but the construction sector too. So unless we actually get the energy story straight, and which I believe strategically is really important, there's not a lot of hope. So I don't know where we go, Edwin. You and I know that there are people with vested interests who are only interested in their own interests, not the interests of the broader population and not in the interests of ordinary Australians. I was talking to a first-time buyer family the other day who were tearing their hair out trying to work out what to do and just getting more and more confused and, frankly, more desperate, even as property gets less accessible to them. Because, you know, all the analysis says you need more and more and more in the way of income to be able to actually make your ability to be able to live. And, you know, this article came out saying $105,000 a year, crazy amount a family must spend just to get by in Sydney. And they actually broke it down, the living costs in our big cities. The point is that this sort of number is now well over the average income. So what it says is that we've gone off the rails in terms of just getting by. And then, of course, you've got these high housing costs and you've got the big mortgage rates and the big mortgages. And yet of now they're talking about stoking it even more. I just find it really tough to deal with, which is why some people are saying, well, maybe it's just time to look and maybe think of going somewhere else. On the same time, though, we are still bringing large numbers of migrants into the country who are cashed up.
And that's the problem. And this is the problem, Martin. One side wants to bring in renters. The other side wants to bring in landlords. So, pick your poison. That's what it comes down to. If you look at the policies with regards to immigration, it's one or the other. Which one's going to be better to fulfill or to have some sort of a stability in under the one roof for longer than 6 months or longer than 12 months without having to have the fear of having to shift further afield where it's going to cost you a lot more to get to where to infrastructure, the things that you need. But at the end of it, we're faced more and more with the cost of construction, and this is becoming even more critical now. And this is why I don't like these promises over the last 3-4 years of wanting to build and wanting to build a lot cheaper. I really can't see it. I really can't see how they're going to build. I mean, I know how they will build. They'll start building the shipping container homes. that's one way of looking at it. I mean, this just came across one of my social media feeds, and I thought, gee, that's interesting. But that seems to be. I mean, we laugh about it. But it's better than a tent in a park somewhere, where in some parts They're calling in excavators and moving these the homeless along now. And there's now also a trend with the young people, which is an unfortunate trend, but it's where what else do you do? Where else can you go? Where there's even entire families living in cars. I guess the option with that is you get yourself a membership with a local gym or one of those Plus Fitness or Anytime Fitness, and you can use the bathrooms and showers when you want to when you want to get ready in the mornings. But I mean, this is the state that we're in, and yet the majors are throwing more money at trying to, or seemingly throwing more money at wanting to win your vote, but not really with the issues, the real issues. And this is where I think people are going to have to wise up, and we're going to have to educate ourselves a lot more with who's out there, who's potentially does have a voice pull the coats of these of the majors, and promote some sort of change for the positive rather than the negative.
Well, it's interesting you put out this post, which I thought was quite good. Tweedledum and Tweedledee, right? Two sides of the same bum, two wings on the same bird, as we've said before, right? The point is that neither of the two majors should be taken seriously with regard to their policies with regard to housing, because they're not really interested in solving the underlying problem, which of course then begs the question, well, what do you do? Well, maybe some of the minor parties are worth thinking about. But it does really beg the question, doesn't it, about how you can possibly navigate your way through this. And it's interesting because, of course, over the last week, there's been a lot of noise internationally with regard to things like the bond markets. And I made a show the other day about the hyper-financialized world and the bond markets. And I also made a show about RMS Trump sailing on, having avoided an iceberg for now as he pulled back on some of the tariffs. Actually 145% on China, blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting, of course, that the reaction immediately was cut the rates, so we had people saying the RBA needs to play catch up. And people are talking about three or four rate cuts, and Chalmers came out and said, oh, they're going to cut rates. Then Bullock came out and said, well, hang on a moment, let's not get too hasty. NAB is now expecting a 0.5 percentage point rate cut in May, and Deutsche Bank is again reversed a call for a 0.5 percentage point cut in May, now expecting a 0.25 percentage point cut instead. Our general conviction around the path for lower RBA rates has increased, Deutsche Bank said. But the fact of the matter is, if the bond rates continue to rise, and because bond prices are falling, because people have less confidence about the US economy, that's going to put more upward inflationary pressure, and that's going to make it harder for the RBA to navigate what to do. And I don't want to scoop people too much, but remember, this is a few years ago, but the old crash. How the world panicked. Well, I think we saw a bit of that last week as well. And my own observation is that we are not out of the woods internationally with this trade stuff. This is going to go on for quite some time. Now, of course, the RBA says, well, maybe the China stimulus can protect Australia from the carnage. Maybe, maybe not. Traders are talking about months of pain despite the recent rally. And of course, we even had Goldman, who at one stage came out and forecast a US recession, and then 73 minutes later reversed that forecast. So epic week. Bond markets are left reeling. And the point there is that internationally, we've got this sort of global financial situation. Locally, we have the housing situation. And we're into the election story here. And I don't know what you think, but for me, the election narrative is just completely off the rails. It's just so far away. It's interesting. You see this one. This was actually quite interesting. The best and worst PMs for house prices. So believe it or not, they've linked Howard, Rudd Gillard, Morrison, and Albanese with what's happened to house price trends. And I think Morrison and Howard are the winners. So that tells you that, well, you know, if you want house prices to go on going up, go back for the coalition. But as we said, it's not solving the problem. And that's really the issue. It's not solving the problem. So I don't know really what people are going to do. And by the way, did you see this? Meriton has now been charged with 103 million in defects for another building problem. And this is another case where they, you know, built perhaps not to standard or whatever. But as a result of it, there's now a question here. And so we've got, let's throw stuff up. Let's try and build little dog boxes. Let's try and build quick. But we know we can't. And so with the international backcloth of the trade tariffs and the local backcloth of housing and the stupidity of the housing situation, the election campaign is a complete joke.
Yeah, and I guess what we're trying to decipher and what we're trying to understand is what are people going to be doing moving forward over the next 6 to 12 weeks, and and what are they going to decide? Are they going to really pull back from listing the homes? Are they going to take the homes off the market? One thing for sure, Martin, is that the asking prices aren't really seem to be not dropping in a lot of parts of the Sydney market anyway. Maybe in other parts of Australia there may be, but our backyard isn't. There's not much happening there. There's a lot more bait advertising happening. That's for sure. Where we've got 1.2, 1.3 million dollar homes advertised with guides of 950 in the western suburbs. That's happening more and more. Likewise in other parts of northwest region and the eastern suburbs, and you've got all the shenanigans that go on with it. But I think with all this unrest, with all this noise, political noise, economic noise, global noise. People are going to start taking the listings off the market, and if they were thinking of listing the properties on market, I think it's going to be a waiting time until spring, whilst all this uncertainty. As I've said before, historically, from when you look at the elections, numbers pull back. When you look, traditionally. And from a seasonal point of view, where we're now moving into winter, we're now in winter. So and we've got Easter coming up, we've got the school holidays, and those numbers are going to start coming in. How far they drop in terms of listings on market is going to be a wait and see. But in how significant they're going to be, one thing for sure is that there's not much movement in Melbourne as opposed to Sydney in retraction of numbers on market. But it's all hit and miss. But for me, Martin, it's as I said earlier on, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. What choose your poison. One wants to bring in more renters. The other one wants to bring in more landlords. Which one's better for the economy? They'll tell you which one's better for the economy in their own language, in their own terms. But which one's better for the Aussie battlers that want to have that roof over their head and not being thrown out or the rents or being jacked year on year. So it's a sad state of affairs. And I think it's going to get a lot choppier moving forward, Martin, because of the noise and the week what the witcher chatterers have been saying as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we're not out of the woods at all. Though it is interesting if you look at the your tracker you've got here, the Sydney and Melbourne property trends. This is the small and medium homes. Sydney and Melbourne homes, and you can see here that the story is that some different changes in those different locations. Quite interesting to see. Smaller homes are still more attractive than larger homes. As your data shows, there was this is one we've been tracking 1140 back then. Then it went to 1089 homes below a million in the Sydney region, 1063, still a very low number. And I guess, Edwin, the point there is that we are going to see the property markets probably freezing a little bit because of all this uncertainty. We know also that there are still people coming into the country with money, and they're still certainly buying. I was talking to somebody the other day who actually was telling me about they came in with $2.5 million and was able to buy almost immediately a four-bedroom house on the outskirts of Melbourne, and are very happy. So if you come in with cash, and of course the exchange rate has moved so that effectively, I think they had US dollars, and they were able to actually get a very good rate when they came to Australia. It gives them more empowerment to buy. But ordinary people, the Aussie battlers, the one third of people who are in the rental sector and are struggling to pay the rent, those people aspiring to get into the property market, those needing to move up the chain, they're all being caught on so many points here. And again, I come back to the fact that the campaign was ridiculous. There's been nothing really, but it is about bell whistles, dog whistles. It's trying to attract people to vote for me because I'm going to do this or whatever. And I have to say, Edwin, I'm very disgusted with the bulk of the mainstream media who really have not done a good job in really getting to the heart of the debate. They seem to me just reflecting back what the politicians want them to say.
Yeah, but the thing is, Martin, it's what is it? It's one of those things that it's an unwritten law now that you can't ask the hard questions if you're a mainstream reporter, because if you ask the hard questions, if you ask the real questions, especially moving into a defining moment in time, historically, this is going to be defining for many many reasons. But they're not allowed to ask the are they not allowed? Have they been paid not to ask? What is the $64,000what's the answer to the $64,000 question? What's holding them back from asking the hard-hitting questions? Because if you start talking about energy fixes a lot of things. Energy prices, as you said earlier on, fixes a lot of things, and it because it rolls into the aspect of transport and transport menu, the little manufacturing that we have, to provide materials to the job sites, imports as well as transporting the goods. And everything else in between. But all that seems to be happening. But you can't ask that question. You can't ask that question because you get called a right-wing conspiracist, you get called a nut job, you get called Hitler's child, you get called whatever. And is that the issue? Is that why they don't want to ask? But those questions go back and have a major impact, or the answers to those questions, or those policy changes, have a major impact with households that are trying to live week by week, day by day, meal to meal, and which is what the Monday evening rants are all about. It's all about housing and from all sides and aspects, buying, renting, selling, and movements in the Sydney region, in the Sydney market. But as I said, it just seems to be that there's more and more piling on to the cost of construction, more and more piling on to the competition out there. There's more and more impediments, obstacles, challenges for locals, as you said, because you've got expats, or you've also got people that have come into Australia decades ago, came in, got the PR, left, and now they're coming back because of all the uncertainty around the world. And as I said, we're in, yeah, things are going to get very, very choppy as we get closer to the election and even moving forward, because of so much uncertainty. And you wait and see, all these promises that have been made are just going to fall by the wayside, and we're just going to get back to the good old let's keep on throwing some more fuel to this dumpster fire, because we needed to stoke it a lot more, so that people can draw on the equity so that they can spend on the one hand, and on the other hand, let's bring in more renters. And oh, by the way, well, I think we need to bring in more landlords, so let's bring in the golden visas, whatever it takes. But that's where we're going. I really can't see any relief for the battlers. And as I've taken that yeah, take their screenshots and just watch the million-dollar homes and yeah and below just diminishing diminish on a weekly basis. Not dramatically, because as I said, once they get sold, the new ones that get put up are basically ones that are being understated by the true value of what they are. So, but this is where we are, and times are going to get a lot more uncertain, as I said, and that's what the WeChat chatters are waiting, looking, and now they're starting to rescope the property landscape, because to them, it's either that they put the money in gold, or they put the money in property. And you know what they favor the most?
Absolutely right. Well, gold price, of course, continues to rise, but property is there. Now, one of the thing about property, of course, is quality of construction and quality of work done. And you've got a really interesting little story to tell here about waterproofing. So we might switch tracks slightly and just talk a little bit about that. I've got a video to show as you talk about it too.
Yeah, so as I said, I've been busy today, and I'm just looking around, and got invited to see the inside a complex, and this is the beginning. As I said earlier on, this is the beginning of the end. So what we've got here is the first layer of waterproofing that's being laid on the substrate of the or the yeah, call it the screed, call it the cement bed, whatever you want to call it, of the apartment. And when I went in there, and one of the foremans on site was showing me the site, I was able to step on the. It was dry, so I was able to step on the on the first layer of waterproofing, and as I peeled away at it, it just pulled away from the substrate, from the screed, but it was very noticeable that they reckon that they put a primer on. I don't believe that a primer was put on, and the first layer of of waterproofing membrane was put on an unclean surface. I could still feel the dust even after pulling, picking away at the waterproofing membrane there. And there was evidence of more bubbling up in other parts, other than the ones that I was able to video. So I had to be quick, had to be quick in and out. But all I can say is, when you're buying into these new so-called homes that the government and everybody else is trying to corral the younger people, the Aussie battlers into, this is the beginning of the money pit. This is the state of construction in its simplest form. And you know what, Martin? The contractor that they used in this complex is actually has major contracts with government buildings around New South Wales. He's got major contracts with government, and he's moving into the residential sphere. I wish he would just stay with the government buildings and leave the residential to other waterproofing blokes or people that know what they're doing. This is the beginning of the of the the money, well, the money pit that just never ends. But it's just as simple as that. Simple as not properly cleaning the substrate, and then just putting anything on it without even following. Simple. It doesn't take long to waterproof a shower rinse area or a bathroom. It really doesn't. It just 2 hours. It's done properly, and it's not cheap. They're charging $1,200 per visit.
It's astonishing. Well, not astonishing. It's horrendous when you actually realize what's going on. And again, we see, the fact is the quality of construction is getting poorer and poorer. In some cases, the traders themselves are trying to run faster because they don't have the time. In some cases, they don't have the experience. In some cases, they grab for the cheap materials to try and cut corners as well. And so you end up with a property that is not fit for use. And of course, the problem with waterproofing is it doesn't show up necessarily on day one. So they'll slap some, tiles or something over the top, or otherwise make it look fine. But in a few months or years, you're going to find water penetration, and then you're going to find all sorts of ridiculous things. And as you know, and I know, Edwin, water is not your friend when it comes to living in a property, whether it's from mold, whether it's from peeling paint, or worse.
Yeah, and this is the problem, and I can guarantee you that high-rise Harry's 132 million dollar bill is got a lot to most of it will probably have to do with waterproofing issues or throughout the complex or complexes, and this is an unknown. You just don't know if you don't see it. If you don't see it, if you don't understand it, if you don't see, you don't realize what something as simple as this could create the major problems across all these. And I think we're moving into a new era where we're going to start seeing towards the end of the year, we're going to start hearing and there will be a lot more reports from what I'm already. Talking to these engineers and these foremans on site and everything, and they're all also talking about all the new housing that has been built northwest and west of Sydney and the many issues around there and the many corners that are being cut there as well. So it's not just the high rise, it's just construction in general. And as I said, look, 6 months ago, I could get a waterproofer for between $600 and $800 to for one visit. And I do a very good job. I mean, given the fact that I was watching over them as well. But now they're charging $1,200. That's only within a period of 6 months. In many trades at the moment, when you talk to the different trades and you talk to they're all now talking about the fact that the Aussie dollar has gone down in value and therefore they've been charged a lot more to buy, which is it hasn't really kicked in, but they're using it as an excuse to hike their prices. I mean, it's talking to two builders today, and they've just jacked their price. Generally, they make around anywhere between 17 and 20% load on the bill. But now they're making they've just jacked it once to 25%, and the other one's jacked it to 27%. So if a builder's doing a job for you and they're charging you it's going to cost $100,000, they'll load that to 125. The builder takes home 25, and they'll still get a 5 to 10% hit or kickback from the tradesperson as well, depending on who it is, depending on the bill. This is what's happening out there. So is there any reason why the I keep on saying that the construction of homes and these promises that the government are making, and they reckon that they're going to be building them cheaper. And if this is the if this if these are the caliber of tradespeople they're going to be using, because this waterproofer is currently an accredited waterproofer with New South Wales government to get government contracts, and is actively waterproofing wet areas in in government jobs. So if this is the caliber, well, yeah, you can build them cheaper, but we're going to have more problems later on down the track, right?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, I was talking again with that first home buyer family the other week, and they were sort of looking at houses and realizing that they couldn't necessarily afford to buy where they wanted to buy. But we did have a discussion about apartments. You know, well, is an apartment an alternative? And I said, well, you know, it might be, but just bear in mind that the strata fees, wherever they are now, you can be pretty sure that in the next few years they're going to go through the roof, literally, because of the poor quality of construction. And again and again in my surveys, what I'm finding is it's the strata fees, it's the maintenance costs, the additional costs that they hadn't thought about, which is actually catching people out. So, you know, they knew about the mortgage costs, they were going to go up, but it's the strata fees. And because of this high cost of getting labor and materials and everything else, and the fact that the properties are so poorly built, it means that the running costs, in other words, your investment, as you said earlier on, it's a money pit.
And that's where we are, Martin. That's where we are in as things move along from what the Witcher charters have been telling us, a lot of manufacturing plants in China are shutting down because of the tariff war with the US, and and they are the majority, most of the workers, if not all the workers, are basically on permanent holiday. Holiday leave, because they can't sack them as such. They just put them on extended leave or holidays, as they call it, so that it doesn't register with the unemployment figures. But so in the short term, you might think that all the goods that are being rejected from America, because what let's say something costs you $100,000, you paid a $50,000 deposit. And you got put on a container ship, and now it's heading to your place over in the US. But when he lands and you pick up that container, because of the tariffs, now you're going to be paying closer to 250,000 for something that costs you $100,000. You're better off, which many are doing, from what we've been told on the on WeChat. Dusty's been told on WeChat what many are doing, and just basically saying, hey, we don't want it. You can keep the $50,000 50% deposit that I paid. You can also keep the rest of the goods, because it's going to cost me over $200,000 once he lands. So all these ghost containers are going back to China. And obviously that's having an impact on future manufacturing, or more manufacturing. I mean, they can't manufacture if they can't sell, they can't continue to manufacture. So then a lot of the companies are shutting down, a lot of the manufacturing plants are shutting down. So I would speculate that in the short to medium term, we may get a lot of Australia may become a dumping ground for a lot of those goods, but do they meet our standards? It would is going to be one of the questions. The other one is going to be how soon before they can get here. So there's still going to be a bit of pain. And are the people going to be importing these goods? Are they going to pass on the savings? I don't think they will. Because they'll use the excuses of the Australian dollar going down and costs going up. But at the end of the day, it's the labor costs that are still very high, regardless of how many so-called skilled workers the governments bring, that the labor costs are still high. So it's not really solving the problem that the so-called skilled migrants have been brought in to solve. They're not, you know, they're not passing on those savings, so it's a mess. And I think as I said, I think it's going to get a lot more choppier before he gets any better.
I agree with you, Edwin. I think that the next few months will be very interesting to watch. And of course, we'll be reporting regularly on the rant, won't we, as we track all of these things. And of course, the other thing that we track is the properties for sale, and we might just quickly switch to those. In Sydney, on the 7th, there were 20,455 properties listed for sale in the Sydney region, as defined by Domain. 19,965 a week later. So we've seen a bit of a fall there. And in fact, the trend is showing a fall, but still higher than last year.
Yeah, we're still tracking close to 3,000, about 3,500 when you take away the land side of things, more than last year. But there's still the demand is still there, and the appetite's still there for the well-presented, well-polished homes. Others are taking a lot longer to sell, but they're still selling. The deals are still being made, and old mate Tom Panos is still getting his 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 12, consecutive clearance rates. So, but he doesn't know what to call it. It's basically be getting worse, but the deals are still being made because of the sheer demand.
Absolutely. Well, demand is still high and people still have money. Some do, not everybody. In Melbourne, a similar story really. On the 7th, 27,812. A week later, 27,257. So a small fall. And again, the majority are houses. We see some townhouses and apartments and land and things, but it is still a story of houses. And interestingly, again, my research continues to reinforce the fact that quite a lot of the properties coming on the market are investment properties that property investors in Melbourne just can't make a return on. And in terms of Brisbane, 3,797 on the 7th to 3,679 on the 14th. So again, a slight easing down. And looking at the auctions, well, I guess no surprise really that this coming week is going to be relatively quiet with Easter, et cetera, et cetera. Last week wasn't too bad, but I still think that people are being cajoled to go to the auction when perhaps they shouldn't.
Yeah, well, this is one of the people have just got to be very, very careful as to and work out, try and work out the track record of the individual that's promoting the property, and there's a lot of there is a lot of I've got to say, there's a lot of banter out there, and I've been reading quite a lot of stuff on Reddit of late. And there are your that there's it, but it's notorious. But when the industry gets into an unknown or uncharted waters or somewhat hard times, or that they don't really know whether to define if the market's going up or if the market's going down, they'll just resort to the shenanigans, which is spin more BS, and try to just they just it's in the DNA. It's a fallback position, and this is where people have just got to be more careful. I think it's also people have got to be extra careful with the with those polished up properties, and and really choose the and make up the mind. Because in some of the areas, like your French's Forest and that, you're getting sales there of your 2.3, 2.4 million dollars for something that's polished up. But if you pick that up, if you picked up a similar property, a same vintage, and you did the renovation yourself, same size block of land, same era, the old red brick homes, more to the point. And you're prepared to do the reno yourself, you can pick it up for between 1.8 and 1.9. Yeah, you're going to spend $200,000 to $250,000 renovating it, and making it look sleek. And I'm talking about really putting in the hard yards in there, and all basically gutting it. But it's going to be renovated to your specs, to your colors, your wants, your needs, your desires, or you. But if you don't want to go through that pain, well, then you pay the premium and you're at the other end at 2.4. So, that's the crux of it. And this is what I'm saying. Like, seems to be a lot of emotion, a lot more emotion in those polished up homes than there are in where we see in many parts of Sydney, whether it's your $1.1 million homes to your 2.5, $2.7 million homes that aren't done up, and with a bit of thought and depending what your budget is, you could be sitting a lot more comfortable. Yeah, there's the pain of doing the renovation, but I know it's. Which pain do you prefer, Martin? Do you prefer the pain of doing the renovation, or do you prefer the pain of paying premium plus more and not knowing how the renovation was what was put together in the first place?
Damned if you do, damned if you don't, I think is the answer, Edwin. Because, of course, if you pay full dollar, that immediately puts a problem if you do need to actually crystallize that later. Whereas if you actually go through the renovation route, you've got to find the traders, you've got to actually be prepared to pay top dollar there too. So, effectively, either way, I think you're a bit caught, which is why so many people that I speak with through my one-to-ones are really quite confused with how to sort of think about this and try and work out, what makes the most logical sense. And of course, there is this financial aspect, but then you've also got to have the social disruption. If you're living amongst building works, or if you have to go into rental accommodation if you can find somewhere while they renovate the property, all of those things are part of the confusion as well. So no wonder we have a lot of confused people out there. Just quickly looking at the numbers again, you've kindly collated the clearance rates and the numbers. And you can see there that things, are wobbling around the mid-60s in terms of clearances. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of a continued easing now as we go into the Easter period.
Yeah, look, and things are going to, and we've also got the school holidays and Anzac Day coming up. So yeah, there's not a lot of activity around auctions over the next 2 3 weeks. It's everything else, but I think that demand, that people are still going to be on the prowl. They're still going to be searching. That's going to be the interesting thing.
Yeah, there are still a lot of people out there with high demand, and as you say, searching, trying to work out what's going on. Just look at the rentals briefly. So this is the story for the rentals sector in Sydney on the 7th. 10,244 properties listed, 10,428 a week later. So, not much change there really. In Melbourne, 10,806 on the 7th, 11,065, so a slight rise in Melbourne on the 14th. And that pretty much sums it up, I think, in terms of where we are. Of course, this time of year, there is quite a lot of movement. Some people, as we saw, are coming in into the country looking for somewhere to rent as well. So there is a bit of a churn there. But again, the other story that is not really captured with these numbers, but I have it in my one-to-one surveys, and it's fascinating how many people are being confronted with 10% rental increases. And what do? Do you just take it and pay more? Do you try and find somewhere else, or do you try and find somewhere to buy? And that's the dilemma so many people are facing at the moment.
Yeah, and on the other side of that coin is the people that are holding on to property that demands a lot of work, as I've been saying, and I've been being on for a little while now, and so does George George from ITC on other platforms, is the regulations are really kicking in, and sooner than later. The New South Wales government is going to is going to push and whatever you want to call it, push, coerce, Fair Trade in New South Wales to step it up and really pick up that the new regs and start policing what goes on. So you've got a lot of homes that are nowhere near suitable for occupancy, let alone for long-term occupancy. under the new regulations. And a lot of property managers and a lot of property management teams don't know. They don't know themselves. They don't realize, or they don't want to know. And the landlords don't care and don't want to know either because of the costs. So it's one of those very, very unfortunate times in events that we're in, Martin, that it's hitting everybody from all sides. So many are thinking, maybe I should sell. Others don't. Many also thinking, well, if I sell the investment property, let's not forget, your capital gains. And so this, we're really coming into a lot of uncertain times, and this is why people are sort of reluctant to sell for the many reasons that the governments have created so many issues. But until they start really policing the industry, until they really start cracking down on a lot of these policies, on a lot of these regulations that they haven't been policing for a long time, people are just going to sort of sit back and wait and see, and basically see not move until the government moves, which some may say they're moving very, very slowly, because potentially it could also derail many markets in Sydney if a lot of these properties came on the market all of a sudden.
Well, you said at the top of the show, grab the tequila. I think that's exactly right. Great advice there. But also your thought with regards to the tip of the week. I think this is a very relevant one.
Yeah, look, I think we've got to be careful what we choose for, what we wish for, right? And we got to start choosing wisely moving forward. Obviously, most of it is centered around all these promises and promises, all the rhetoric that we're going to be hearing from all sides, from independents, from the left, from the right, from the greens, from the teals, from you name it, they're all making promises. But do the individuals really know what they want to do for the people, or do they just want a new career path because it's rosy at the after 7 years? It's 7 years, right? 7 years in politics, and you can get a and you got a golden parachute. So but I think we've got to be choose wisely. There are some in my mind, my personal mind, there are some that are starting to start. Yeah, they really hit the right chord, and. But I'm not going to tell people who they are or what, say, who I'm looking at. But I think, in general terms, it's time for us to really sit back and scrutinize. We scrutinize a maker vehicle a lot more than what we do the politicians that we vote into parliament. That's crazy, right?
That's a very good point, Edwin. And unfortunately, what I find quite often is that people really have no strong understanding of what those platforms are and what they're saying. In some cases, some people vote simply because they've always voted that way. In other cases, it's a protest vote. And in fact, I think in this election, we are going to see a high protest vote, as we saw from those earlier statistics. So it is important to actually try and get to the bottom of what people are actually saying and what platforms are actually pushing. But then, of course, the other problem is what they say through an election, and what actually happens post the election is chalk and cheese anyway. So, the whole system is a little bit full of fairy tales. And as I said at the top of the show, the sugar hits and the little bribes there to try and make you vote for me. But there is a very important point here, which is that, I do think Australia is a bit of a turning point, and this is an important election, especially with the international uncertainty as well as the local situation. And yet I suspect that we're not going to actually necessarily get the, a good set of outcomes unless people actually really go through the process of understanding and voting, intentionally, which I think is really important.
That's it, Martin. That's the crux of it. We could I could go on, but it's one of those One of those things where you've got to make a we need to we have to make a more educated decision this time around than than last time. It can't just be because we loathe this politician so much. I mean, you look at both you look at both leaders and you sort of think, how did they even how did they even get there from a personality? I mean, they've got as much personality as a as a piece of as a piece of asbestos that you've pulled out from an old bathroom.
Yes, interesting analogy, Edwin, which I want to pursue further because of all the consequences of asbestos. But no, you make a very good point. And I think it's really important that people do actually take the time to really engage with some of the issues and think strategically about what Australia needs to take itself forward rather than actually just go into this spiraling of higher prices forever, which benefits the banks, which benefit the possible politicians and probably benefit those that hold property. But is that really the right strategy for the country? And I think that's a good point to end the show. Edwin, thank you very much for your time this evening. Really appreciate it. Hope you have a good week, and we'll do it all again next week.
Definitely, man. You take care.
Cheers. Take care.
Bye.